Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, August the 28th, 2009. Well, the bean market is way tight, and soybean meal rallied to within about $30 of its high last summer. What's next in that market? And can new crop catch fire with the dwindling old crop supplies? We'll ask that and many other questions today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. This is a production of Illinois Public Media. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Agit Investments' Sue Martin from Webster City, Iowa. Our panelists in studio today are Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, Bridget Chenoweth of AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. So finally, we've arrived, and the trade seems boggled by the amount of bean meal the U.S. livestock industry is consuming. Might I ask, why would they be boggled?
Well, I think two reasons. One, the heavyweights, especially in hogs, and then in both cattle and hogs, they've been talking about cutting back numbers, and they really haven't cut back numbers much, so they're still consuming a lot of that meal.
That is Pete Manhart with Bates Commodities, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Well, I guess I'd look at the supply side of it as well. I think that we just have some very tight supplies of soybeans. We continue to see beans get shipped overseas and get bought by China. And the meal price has to stay up there to make that crush margin high enough to make the processors continue to keep crushing.
And Bridget Chenoweth is with AgriVisor. And Bridget, if I might have you go ahead and transition into what it all might mean for a farmer producer, whether they have old crop supply that they are thinking about selling and what they might do with new crop.
As far as old crop beans, we were kind of looking at this 990 target area, and the just November contract to make some catch-up sales. You may want to hold on to a little bit and see how far this can run up higher. We don't know how much more upside potential may be in the market. You know, we're looking at some cycle counts that are saying that, you know, we could see a little bit of a low put in place during the month of September.
And, Bill, what do you think producers should be doing with their old crop at this time, if they have it left?
I guess I think that they probably need to move it just in a general term as far as old crop goes. But I think the bean market is very, very tough to market right now because you have a situation where you have profitable levels, looking maybe switching to the new crop side a little bit.
Right.
You have profitable levels, but yet you're in this situation where we have a very tight situation. We don't know what kind of crop we really have out here yet. And if there would be some kind of a freeze situation, the soybean market could really get driven a lot higher. So I think the way that you have to approach it is you have to get those profits locked in by making some cash sales and then go up and protect yourself against the chance of frost with some kind of a call option out of the money, a couple of bucks probably.
Pete, we'll have you give your numbers on that one in just a second, but let's get the numbers from the Board of Trade in first. September this week, and the soybeans had a high of $11.64 and three quarters, a low of $10.36 and a quarter. Their settlement price on the week at $11.35 and three quarters, $1.12 higher from the previous week. November soybean settlement on the week up 30 cents, Friday 38 cents rather, Friday to Friday at $10.11. Your view of the bean market.
Well, old crop, I don't know if there's much left out there. So the basis is very good also, and the price for old crop's good. I'd probably be unloading that, but I would be protecting new crop. If I've sold a bunch of new crop for a frost scare possibility, I would be looking at buying either some November or January calls and holding them till the 1st of October to see if we really do have a problem with this crop. We do have, you know, the late planting where beans are still subject to a lot of damage if we would have anything that's early on a frost basis.
And then maybe we can switch that around and talk about bean meal and whether producers who have been consuming, whose livestock has been consuming the bean meal, need to do something about that in terms of locking it in or waiting out the marketplace. I did check the numbers on the weekly trade for this bean meal September contract at $387 on its settlement, up $54 from the previous week. It pushed, I think, to about $398 but maybe within $28 or $30 of the high from last year. And October bean meal at $320 finished $22 higher from the previous week. So what do you do if you're a livestock producer at this point?
Well, we were looking at locking in that $290 to $320 in the last month, and we would still be locking that in thinking that bean meal will be tight because of what Bill talked about and the tight supply worldwide.
I guess I'd kind of look at it the same way as on the other side. I think I'd just be going hand to mouth right now, maybe go up there and look at some kind of a bull call spread or something to try to protect you against some kind of a frost scare. Let me just add, too, one other thing that when you look at the 2010, that's one thing we really started looking at closely in our office, 2010 economics. Boy, there just isn't any doubt that it really points towards more soybean acres. So I think that's something longer term, looking out there longer term when we get into South American planting, that we really have to be aware of.
Yeah, so if you've looked at that, maybe you can talk a bit about it, because it would be 2010 harvest season for a crop that'll be harvested not a year from now, but in April and March potentially of next year. So it's not all that far away. And the trade will start to take a look at how many acres are going to be put in the ground there. And I think predictions at this point suggest that there'll probably be more acres of beans in South America than in previous years.
Yeah, I think that's what everybody's looking at. Argentina's, you know, tried to put some feelers out that they may not have. They may have some economic considerations and with the fees and everything that the government's trying to put on them. But overall, you're going to have more beans produced in South America with good weather than what you had last year.
You in agreement with that, and then you probably need to roll that into what you do with the crop you've got in the ground here in the United States.
Absolutely. We're in agreement that, you know, we think we're going to see some additional acres of soybeans planted down there in South America. That's still a long way away, and there's still a lot of what-ifs out there. You know, definitely we still have to wait and see how the weather unfolds in that time period, but we still definitely believe there's going to be some more bean acres put into the ground. How that correlates to this year's crop up here in the U.S., you know, we were pretty aggressive in moving some of this new crop out already, and we're going to kind of hold off now because we're still in this time period that, you know, there's still enough what-ifs for this crop that we have right now. So we're kind of going to sit on the sidelines a little bit until we get into harvest.
Let's take a look at some of the rest of the numbers as they came in from the CME group. Since we've talked about bean meal and livestock, we'll put these numbers in now. August live cattle for the week, a high of 85.55, a low at 84.50. Settlement price there down 35 cents at 84.65. The September feeders at 98.15 were down $2.55 for the feeder cattle. And October lean hogs at 49.50 top, bottom at 46.50. The settlement price today at $48.07, down 22.5 cents from the previous week. In the wheat pit this week, September contract at a high of $4.89, a low at 4.59.5, settled at $4.67. And while that's a low price, it's still up 6.75 from the previous week, which I don't know that I realized until I wrote it down and I had to look at it a second time, because wheat seemed like it was awfully weak this week. July futures of next year were up 8.5 cents at 5.40 1/4. It sure seemed like wheat was awfully weak in the marketplace this week, yet it finished higher.
Well, Friday it was down, but you got to remember, during the week we had a bounce up, clear up to, what, 5.18, 5, something like that, before going back down to, what, 4.80-something. So even though it finished Friday lower, it had a big bounce up during the middle of the week, just like corn and beans did, and then backed off from those highs.
Have you had discussions in your office, Bridget, about the new plan from CME Group and Convergence and the way they plan to try to make the wheat market match the basis up properly?
You know, we haven't had too many discussions about it, you know, in our office, you know, here lately.
All right. So let's take a look at the corn numbers very quickly. September corn, 331 and three quarters the high this week, the low at 315. A settlement price, three quarters of a cent lower at $3.21. December corn at 329, up 2 3/4. So here we set with December corn at $3.29. Is there anything, Bill Mayer, that a producer needs to do other than to watch the marketplace and check to make sure that they're not going to get a frost on their corn?
No, I think right now, I mean, assuming that the producer made some sales earlier, if you didn't make any sales earlier, I think you have to be looking for opportunities. But just the opposite, I guess, in a way of what the soybeans are, I don't think we're in a, you know, we're below crop insurance levels. We're below the acre levels if you signed up for that. So I guess right now I think the best thing to do is just kind of wait here and see. But I think I would say with just a little bit of caution there, I guess I feel there could still be some opportunities between now and the time that we get into the real harvest season here and the real gut slot of harvest. And I think, you know, you don't want to just ignore the market. I think you want to pay attention because a 30, 40 cent rally higher, then you may want to be looking at doing something.
You know, if you look at in the last couple of weeks, we had corn at 411, went up to 311, went up to, 376, went right back down to 315 area. So, I mean, if we have that bump up, we need to be taking advantage of it. Hopefully you've all sold a whole pile of $4 corn that we had an opportunity to do earlier in the year.
Well, when you say take advantage of it, are you talking about cash sales, and do you need to do replacements at some point in that process? What do you mean by take advantage?
Depending on where you're at. If you've sold a lot of cash, I wouldn't be selling anymore. I'd be putting something underneath it. If you've sold a lot of cash and we go back down a little, I might be replacing it. With this worries about the end of the season coming earlier with calls on a possible frost.
We're in the same mindset that we're hoping that, you know, you have a lot of those cash sales already put on the books, and we're kind of in a holding pattern here until harvest gets to rolling and we actually see what those yield numbers come in at.
And what do you do with corn crop that you've got setting, and I'm going to say in the bin at this point, and you haven't priced it? And then the flip side is if you've got corn that you have in the elevator, it's got to be moved and moved quickly. So those are two kinds of different sorts of situations, but they're not very far apart.
I think that you look at you have to get yourself in a position where the market doesn't force you to move the corn, that you make the decision on when you want to make the move, and probably a basis contract is one way to go. Selling the corn, coming back in with some re-ownership with call options would be another way. But the basis is very good right now. If you look at Central Illinois, you see some levels where you could lock in on this old crop corn over the December futures. So I think you got to take advantage of that because that may be gone as we get into harvest.
Did you see this week that USDA talked about numbers for net farm income being down in the year by something along the lines of 38%? Have producers been talking to you about a revenue crunch for the coming season?
Well, sure they have. You look at what their expenses were. A year from now, we were people locked in, fertilizer costs and other costs, and guess what? 8 months later, they came down, or 6 months later. So they put more out, the price they're getting paid if they didn't take advantage of prices last fall for this year. So they have a tighter revenue totally, but I would be unloading all that old crop corn and going to calls on the board.
And so where would you buy the calls at?
I would be looking at buying either March calls or even December. Well, I wouldn't go be December probably. March calls and buying something $3.50 to $4 calls.
Anybody else have ideas on what to do with the corn market?
I would probably stay in the December because I guess I feel like the freeze possibilities is probably our next big fundamental change that's out here if it happens. So, you know, I'd want to see what happens with that before I get too far out into the future.
Now, Bill, you'll be at Farm Progress Show next week with us, won't you?
Yes, I will be. In fact, Strategic will have a booth there as well.
And I'm sure GrowMark will have a booth out there.
Yes, so, AgriVisor.
AgriVisor will be there, and you'll be making a trip, I'm sure, to Farm Progress Show.
Yeah, I'll be there, and Kurt will be there.
And Kurt will be there, and we want to make sure that everybody comes and visits us on the Farm Progress Show site. Don't forget that that's next Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday right there in Decatur, Illinois, and that you can come see Dave Dickey and myself at the Farm Progress Show site. And many of our analysts, the analyst and Dave, will be at the AgriGold tent each day and have a program just about every 20 minutes or so. So if you're walking around the course of the Farm Progress Show, you can stop in at the AgriGold tent and get some advice on marketing the crop. And if you'd like to see our closing mark report live, you can do that on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday afternoon, starting at 1:50 and then again at 2:06. We will broadcast our programming live from there. We hope to see you next week. Please drop by and see us. And don't forget, you can always go and get this program, other agricultural programming, anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Back in 2 minutes when we'll talk with Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. After an unusually cool and fall-like weekend, the weather only gradually warmed up this week across Illinois. The warming was cut off in northern Illinois by Wednesday as rain developed along a stalled cold front, but it continued into late in the week in central and southern Illinois as those areas remained south of the front. High temperatures in central and southern Illinois on Thursday reached the mid-80s, a few degrees above normal for this time in August. Despite the warming, daily average temperatures this week were still 5 to 6 degrees below normal. Modified growing degree days since May 1st are running about 50 units behind normal in far southern Illinois to almost 300 behind normal in northwestern Illinois. Rainfall through Thursday of this week was confined to northern Illinois, north of I-80, and it was heavy in places. Several inches of rain were measured in a number of locations in northern Illinois Wednesday and Thursday. Much cooler air will gradually filter into Illinois this weekend, and temperatures much of next week will continue to run well below normal. High pressure will likely remain situated over the Midwest much of the week, and skies should remain generally fair until Friday, when clouds and perhaps a few showers could push into western Illinois. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, August the 28th, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Our panelists in studio today are Bridget Chenoweth of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign. Our guest on the phone line is Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services in Webster City, Iowa. That's just to the north of Des Moines and a bit of west. And it's right there in the heart of Iowa corn country. She's also on our air each and every day on the home radio station during the noon hour. Sue, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Todd.
Well, let's start with this question. I suspect that you've been out and about, or at least the farmers in your area have been telling you about the crop that they've got in the ground and growing at this point. And I'm wondering if it agrees with the USDA's, oh my gosh, it's going to be a big one prediction.
It certainly does. The Iowa crop, I've been all across the state. It's a fabulous-looking crop. The corn is going to be probably one of the best yields we've had, other than, you know, we have areas that have been hit by hail. But, you know, I think the USDA keys in a fudge factor for something like that. But other than that, we're looking at a very good crop. Now, the soybeans, they look awfully good, too, except that we're noticing quite a few patches of sudden death starting to show up. And so that's a little bit of a concern. But still, the crops are very green. And, of course, we're coming into the time of the year, and it's been an abnormally cool summer, cooler than last year. And therefore, while the crop conditions look good, they're telling you also just how far behind this crop really is.
Hey, Sue, I've got a second question for you on the disease. Is SDS is something that had come up from the south, so soybean farmers that were in the southern areas knew about it. It made its way through Illinois. Is this really the first year that it's made big inroads into Iowa? We're hearing about it more than usual. And then what about white mold as well?
Well, I don't hear a lot about white mold in Iowa. I hear more about that in Wisconsin and from clients in Illinois, and more so from even Ohio to Indiana. So it's more of an Eastern Corn Belt thing so far. More than anything, I'm hearing about the sudden death more through Iowa and southern Minnesota. And I think it seems more prevalent this year than I've noticed other years. I'm not sure what the reason for that really is, but we certainly are seeing it.
Hey, Sue, I know you just said that, you know, you expected this Iowa corn crop to be a, you know, a strong number. What are you advising for your new crop sales that farmers may still need to make prior to harvest?
Well, we had a lot of our sales on our website where we had recommended up to 65% sales of what you had for, actually, we're 100% sold, I guess, on corn for what is thought to be of insurance. And we, for those who didn't listen and follow, which that happens every year, it's hard when you're seeing detrimental weather and you're not getting crops in. It's hard for people to sell ahead sometimes. And I think there's a large mix of producers out there that don't like to sell anything they don't have until it's harvested and in their bins. But what we have been telling them here, because of our concern that the market is at a very low level and it's trading in a range which we expect it to continue in for a little while longer, we recommended a week and a half ago that they go over and buy, instead of buying corn calls like the 370 call or something like that in case we get a frost freeze, we recommended they go buy the bean calls and buy $10 November bean calls for 40 cents. And the reason our thought process was is that the beans fundamentally are just bullish anyway. And then if you get an early frost freeze on corn, well, you're going to get it on beans as well. And it's going to decimate the bean crop. And, of course, when we look at the weather patterns, the weather patterns, how comparable they are to the year of 1965, and we had a frost freeze in a large chunk of the upper Midwest, on September 5th that year, we have so many similarities that we thought that the potential was more real this year than most any year I can even think of. But the demand has been so good, so we thought if a frost freeze hits corn, the beans will way outpace the move. And, of course, just going on anticipation because of the tight supply, those options would protect that corn, those cash sales. Now, for something that's not sold, it's really difficult to sell here, I guess, because we are so cheap. I do think we're going to get a little lift in corn and wheat both. Seasonally, you tend to move down in wheat towards the end of August, even in a bare year, and then you'll get a bounce into about October 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, somewhere in there, and then you turn south. Well, I could see the corn market doing that as well, and it's kind of being tugged with beans a little bit, and yet wheat's been so negative. I'm losing my voice here. But the wheat market did kind of almost make a possible double low here this week and or possibly this month. And so if that's the case, you know, that should instill a little more lift, too, and that'll just help the corn bounce a little bit better. And maybe we can get some sales off around 350 or something like that or 370 again. But it's going to take making some higher highs, of which we just haven't seen.
Sue, could you discuss the demand side of the corn market a little bit? What do you see, especially on the livestock side of it?
Well, I think that one thing that we've got going here is if you look at the livestock side, you know, I agree with the comment made that, you know, there was supposed to be some liquidation, but producers have been a little bit slow to come about that in the hog industry. And I tend to agree with that. But, you know, Purdue University did a study on corn and in the various stages here this week. And they talked about that if a frost freeze hit, you know, at the time, 55% of the crop, if it hit, while the crop was in the dough stage, that would give you like a 55% loss is what I want to say. And, of course, then that loss declines to 41% if the frost occurs during dense stage and declines to 12% if the crop is in another 10 days down the road to half milk. But the thing I guess I'm going at here is that if you're in the dough stage, you're going to see a ton of silage, and that will instill more demand for livestock to be fed. But here again, all of a sudden you've got all this silage, you've got a lot of DDG around, and because you now have also an industry, an ethanol industry, that's going to be better this coming year than it was this past first half of the year. And then you've also got a lot of feed wheat available in the world. So it seems like corn's going to have its share on the feed side. It's going to have its share of competition. But in the meantime, the industrial side might have to say, I need to step up to the plate and buy corn. It may be that they have to get aggressive. Now, the one thing we're seeing is that in the Western Corn Belt, there could be a need for up to like 630 million bushels of more grain storage than you know needed than what we had a year ago. And, of course, a large part of that increase will come out of the state of Iowa, where the corn crop is estimated to be about 280 million bushels larger than last year. And we estimate that the Eastern Corn Belt is probably going to need 70 million bushels more of grain storage as well. And part of it also is the fact that farmers hung on to some of this old crop corn a little too long, and it, too, is sitting in the elevators. So that's going to be an interesting thing here. We even see just not far from me, I have an elevator that has usually 3 million to million two bushel piles in the outside that is tarped. They still have one from last year. And so that's a concern because we still have all this old crop corn. Now, if you get a you know, if over Labor Day weekend we get hit with a pretty hard freeze, you know, it can happen. Look what happened to wheat a year ago, and again, not so bad this year. Things can happen, but if it did happen, then maybe that old crop corn is going to be needed because of the quality that we're going to see, because that's going to be the other issue that we're going to deal with. If you get corn frosted or frozen, and it's in part of its later stages, there's where the concern becomes, because you get the light test weights, reduces the yields, but it also tends to increase your cracked corn quality, and that corn does not keep well or store well. And so the farmer may have to move a bunch of that sooner than he plans. That could keep basis levels pretty soft and be a detriment as well.
Sue, we appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Thank you.
Sue Martin is with Ag and Investment Services. She's out of Webster City, Iowa. You can hear her on our home radio station anytime you'd like, each and every day of the week. And it's on our website at willag.org, posted there at about 12:55 daily. Other people that you can hear are also in our studio today. And we'll get a final word from them, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities.
Without frost damage, we should have a regular crop. I kind of question the size, the bigness of it in the Eastern Corn Belt, but the Western's supposed to be big. So I would, you need to be looking at replacing old crop. You need to be looking at if we don't have a frost, what do we do for prices and how do we protect them?
Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Looking forward to seeing everybody at the Farm Progress Show next week. Make sure you stop by, and always enjoy visiting with people and talking about the markets.
And Bridget Chenoweth of AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois.
I think over the next 3 to 4 weeks, you need to keep a close eye on the weather conditions. That's really going to determine how this crop fares out this year.
And that wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. Something to keep in mind, you can always access Commodity Week and our analysis throughout the week on demand on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web is willag.org. Don't forget to visit us next week at the Farm Progress Show, either at the AgriGold tent or the University of Illinois tent. You have a great week. I'm Todd Gleason. We'll be right back.